The pendulum of China's population growth may swing to the negative in the next 10 years. And that's according to the latest report issued by the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Such changes in growth and structure of population will inevitably affect the most populous country and the second largest economy in the world. The good news is, the China Population and Labor Yearbook 2019 also identify some ways in which we can best negotiate these changes, and that is the topic for discussion today. So let's look at what are the crucial revelations in the Population and Labor Yearbook 2019?
First of all, like you said, the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences published a report, and they do it every year, and this year is the 19th, the China Population and Labor Yearbook. Notice the name is called China Population and Labor Yearbook. Well, what's interesting is a lot of the media reports that are covering this, they seem to be quite preoccupied with the population-related statistics. But anyway, they've so far done a good job at analyzing this data, so we'll quote some of those information they have. So a report by the China News Service highlights the yearbook's prediction on China's population growth. According to the Green Book, China's population will peak at 1.44 billion in 2029, after which point the growth rate will slide into the negative. In a half century, total population will decrease to 1.25 billion in 2065. The reality of population decline is inevitable, according to the yearbook. So here we are, we're looking at negative population growth in 10 years.
So this is the part that I suppose opened the eyes of a lot of people, because when we talk about China, immediately what comes to mind, as I talked to a lot of foreign friends out there, they used to say that it's a kingdom of bicycles and there's so many people on bikes. But if you've come to China in recent years, then maybe you're thinking so many people on their smartphones in the subway, or, you know, there's this, yeah, this other facet
of China.
Traffic
congestion everywhere.
And all those kind of things. Yeah, but certainly population decline, it was never really in the the dictionaries for us in the past when it comes to China situation. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about all of this, Mila?
I think personally, this is not a problem that is actually even unique to China itself. Like just the other day, I was listening to another global report where they were talking about these interesting aspects of like some governments are even resorting to some really unique, advertising and begging their nationalities. Like even if you don't want to have children, just have it for your country. And specifically, this country was like Denmark. They were saying, if you don't do it for yourself, do it for your country, Denmark. And some countries have even gone ahead and, you know, like created like incentives for families just to make younger people want to go out there. They sponsor holidays for you. If you go on holidays and as a couple and you come back pregnant, then you are offered certain, you know, you're given certain priorities or given certain incentives. So personally, I don't think this is a problem that is only unique to China. It's like a problem that is actually facing a lot of developed economies.
Yes, true, because when it comes to North European countries, for many years we've known that they have a low birth rate and they've been struggling with this. And the general understanding is that maybe for Western countries, developed countries, the only exception would be the United States, where they've managed so far to keep the population growth stable. And just very interesting is just today, I read in the Wall Street Journal that actually even the United States is facing a population problem. Among all the states, only South Dakota and also Utah, these are the only two states that have managed to retain or hold on to a replacement fertility rate of 2.1. Namely, every woman in their lifetime are estimated to have an average of 2.1 babies. And that's the fertility rate that the population needs to stay stable, to remain at the same time unchanged. So if you look at the United States now, I mean, the report is that only South Dakota and Utah have managed to hold on to that growth rate, whereas for the country in general, we are looking at a replacement rate or a fertility rate at 1.76, or about 1.76, that's not nearly enough to maintain this population as it is now.
That's very interesting. And also when you look at the U.S., maybe some trends ebb and wane, but it is a country of immigrants.
Right.
So I remember reading a report that lots of this contribution made to sustaining or keeping the total fertility rate up was made by the Hispanics. And and with the Caucasian groups, and especially the more educated people, you can see that the fertility rate is something that is worth the government's concern. And it seems like so many governments around the world, like Nila has mentioned, is trying to get people more excited about having babies, raising kids, and it's not just for your own household's sake, but also for the country's sake, so to speak. And it's important here, I think, to talk about these concepts of total fertility rate and also what Lai Ming mentioned, replacement level fertility, that is 2.1 children for every woman. Mm-hmm. And so what is the situation here in China? How are we doing in, I suppose, here the premises, if we keep these numbers a bit up, or at least to that standard, then population-wise, we shouldn't be too worried. But how are Chinese folks performing in that sense?
Well, according to the estimate by in the Green Book, in the Population and Labor Yearbook 2019, the reality of population decline is inevitable. This estimate is based on a growing total fertility rate worked out by UN's Population Division for China, which increased from 1.6 in 2010 to 1.78 in 2065. Total fertility rate, the concept refers to total number of children born or likely to be born to a woman in her lifetime if she was subject to the fertility rate of about 2.1 children per to the rate of age-specific fertility in the population. And total fertility rate of about 2.1 children per woman is called replacement level fertility. I think I explained it earlier. Mm-hmm. And China's total fertility rate has remained below 1.6 since the 1995 to 2000 interval, and only rebounded since 2013 after changes to the family planning policy. And so basically what happened in 2013 was China gave the green light to parents having a second child on condition that one of the parents was a single child. And then in 2015, the restriction was further loosened to allow all married couples to have a second child. And as a result, total fertility rate in this country climbed back to 1.6 in 2013 and 1.62 in 2016. But like I said, only a fertility rate of 2.1 is enough to maintain the population at its current level, whereas anything below that means population decline eventually in the future. So we managed so far with the loosening up of the family planning policy to encourage more people to have more babies, but in general terms, that's not enough to withhold or to, I would say, to negate the effect of population decline.
So it looks like a big force that's going forward, and it's going to be pretty difficult. A lot of measures need to be taken, I think, to reverse that. And one thing, Lai Ming, that I really appreciated you say was you kept on saying maintaining the population level when we talked about replacement level fertility, right? To put it bluntly, is every year there are new births and new deaths as well. So in order to make sure that the population actually goes up, then we need to look at how, I guess, how many babies are born every year and what are the measures and policies that have been rolled out to encourage such behavior. In a way, it seems like this is still a pretty young discussion. In the 1950s, 60s, I can't really imagine this being a discussion in China when you need to talk about the importance of family and having babies and even giving encouragement, so to speak. And for those born in the 1980s, that was the generation that every family had one child.
True.
And that was the standard. And now, as we pass the benchmark of the millennium and more than a decade after, now we're seeing that the conversation or the narrative has changed again. And now it seems like having babies could be making a contribution for your country.
Yeah, so we talk about maintaining population at its current level as if it is a very positive thing. I mean, but in reality, true. What the population, the ideal population for a country always changes according to the level of economic development and socioeconomic development. At the moment, we want to maintain the population at its current level. We want to make sure the population grows steadily. Precisely because we are looking at other issues. We are looking at an aging society because nowadays people are living longer and therefore elderly people make up a larger portion of the population. And as a result, if you couple that with low birth rate, you're going to be looking at fewer and fewer people joining the workforce in maybe in 10 years, in 20 years. So that's why we wanted to do this. And very interesting, another report by Beijing Evening News looked precisely into the part about senior citizens. According to the yearbook, the number of older people in China will increase by 7.5 million every year, and that's an average growth rate of 3.62%. Basically, the yearbook identifies three drivers for the growth of older population in China, including low birth rate, like we mentioned earlier, and the baby boom in the 1950s. A lot of people, like He Yang just mentioned, in the 1950s and 1960s, the norm was to encourage more people to have more babies, so a lot more people could join the workforce and build the country into prosperity. And that was the norm back in 1950s. Now they reached a point where they can retire and they are going to consume more than they are able to produce. And as a result, we need more young people to contribute to the society to keep the society afloat. And then this longevity, like I mentioned, people are living longer. So China is currently at the secondary stage of an aging society. On the one hand, the low birth rate is not enough to bolster the young population. And then on the other hand, the 1950s baby boomers have reached a retirement age, adding to the sheer number of senior citizens in the society. And that's what the yearbook is pointing out for us.
So on the one hand, you have not as many babies that are born. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you get an aging population. Mm-hmm. And that also means that folks will need more pension for more years and more money on medical bills, maybe. True. In a way, too. So you can sustain that retirement life longer. And sometimes we're talking about decades now. So, I mean, that's good news, but that also means that more resources, medical resources, and also financial resources, it's all needed here.
This actually reminds me of this video. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's been going viral about Chinese families, so showing like how four different generations are living under the same roof. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, in my family, it's only two generations. So yeah. I can see where the problem is here, because China now the economy is doing great. Like, the living standards are very improved. People are living much, much longer, which means we need more resources. But then you see a lot of people, with this comes a lot of like pressure on the economy, on the governments, on the resources themselves. And if you have more people, definitely, and you have people who are using more than they can't produce, like you said, it becomes like strenuous on the economy. And true. I think this is a problem. Like, for example, if you go to a place, underdeveloped countries, like let's say if you went to my country, Kenya, it's a completely different situation. Like I said, my grandparents like passed on like a really long time ago. I barely have memories of them. So, and in this case, a lot of people tend to have more kids. So on one hand, you have developed countries like China talking about complaining that they need more kids, whereas when you go on the other end of the spectrum, you look at others on the other side of the planet, and people are talking about population control. So for me, it's like a really interesting discussion right at this particular moment.
So there's no real ideal population for a country forever. I mean, it's always constantly changing, and the society has to adapt to that. And as a result, policies need to adapt according to the circumstances as well.
Right. And somebody was arguing the other day that why can't they just like ship, you know, go to countries where they have more people and then you ship them to China, for example. And then there you go, the population of the world is balanced.
Well, I guess that's maybe one of the advantages of countries known for immigrants.
Yeah.
Because you always have the fresh blood coming in and that kind of thing. Well, here when we look at China, with these obstacles, if I can call them that, or these just very practical challenges that the country is facing, what are some of the ways to maybe tackle the so-called negative growth rate when it comes to the birth of babies?
Very good question, because I noticed that a lot of the reports that are looking into this yearbook, they tend to be a little bit pessimistic for my liking, because really this yearbook, like I said earlier, is not just about population, it's about labor. And some of the problems that we just highlighted with a low birth rate and also low fertility rate is that maybe we are worrying that maybe not enough people were going to join the workforce in the future. But there's a lot of changes taking place in the labor market as well. I mean, the yearbook identified that some of the general tendencies that the labor market is developing. For instance, digital skills have become basic employment skills. Being able to access the internet can significantly boost the salary of lower to medium income individuals. Studies have found that individuals who use the internet may see their annual income increase by 46%. Mm. So information technology, that's one way to go. And also, we're looking at migrant workers who are not willing to join the workforce, because for the past few decades, we've been looking at surplus labor coming from China's rural areas, and they move to China's urban areas to find job opportunities. That so far has fueled China's economy, and with lower birth rates, there aren't enough surplus labor in rural areas. As a result, we're not seeing a lot of them so eager to move into urban areas, and as a result, we see a lot of a shortage of labor in coastal regions. We've been talking about it for more than a decade now. But that's not to worry, because we are soon looking at the digital age and also the information age, to the point where machines, automation, and AI technology can take over a lot of the jobs. I mean, the research does have some figures on how many jobs is going to be taken over by automation. I just can't seem to find it. find it at the moment. But the general idea is that about 7 million jobs is going to be taken over by automation and AI technology. A lot of people are worried about this, especially media reports, but that's why I don't like them, because the scientific research by the by the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, they've also managed to find out that actually automation and AI technologies doesn't mean the end of human labor. It involves a reinvention of the division of labor between man and machine. A lot of the times, you can't rely on machines to do all the work for in a factory floor. I mean, I visited one of the Fuyao auto glasses factory in America. They have cutting edge technology. And what I saw was they have people working all side by side with automated machines. So I imagine in the future, that's the way to go forward. A lot of the we may be worrying about machines taking over some of the jobs, but this new division of labor is going to create more jobs. Actually, according to the yearbook, this new division of labor is going to create 133 million new jobs. And a lot of the people who are going to school now, school kids at the moment, 65% of them are going to be doing a job that haven't been invented yet.
That also... What does that mean for you, Neela, when you see that in today's schools that the young people that will graduate in the years to come, they're facing an employment market that they don't know what skills exactly, I suppose. They're that's been asked from them.
I think that's a really good, I mean, that's a problem that a lot of these kids are going to face in the future. What I think is, for me, when I look at, for example, my niece, I was just talking to her yesterday and telling her, what do you want to be? And then she said, I want to like work in the media like you. I told her, don't do it. Like, find something else to do. So the problem is, a lot of these kids are studying things that by the time they graduate, it's going to... The information they're like absorbing now is not going to be really helpful. And I have a feeling the people who are much cleverer, the parents who are much cleverer, are the ones that are steering their kids to follow the path of going into technology, things like technology, because life is now moving on the internet. Everything is going digital and machine-wise. Everything is going AI. So for kids, for me in the future, unless your parents are really, really smart enough to understand and follow the trends of what's going to happen maybe 10 years from now, then those kids are in good hands. But the problem comes in where the kids have to decide whatever they have to do on their own.
Yeah, that's really tough, actually. I remember, well, this will expose my age a little bit. Back in the day, I think it was... it was maybe 15 years ago, I remember... international trade was the most popular major in China.
E-commerce. I think we used to call it commerce. In my age, we used to call it commerce.
So MBA, and then you talk about EMBA.
Yeah.
And I remember a few friends a bit older than me back then had to go to university and actually graduated with a degree in international commerce, or trade, that kind of thing. And then they didn't find jobs. Or they did stuff that was completely unrelated. Mm-hmm. And that trend, I think, fooled a lot of people. And then there was computer science for some time. Now, everybody's talking about AI, therefore, and also for the kids that are going to be living as we envision today. In the future, it's going to be a society that's filled with technology. Those who have technology or knows how to design or use technology can have the upper hand. So STEM subjects, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, that seems more important than ever. Mm-hmm. And but I don't know if these trends are just going to be trends for now, and you don't know whether they're going to be that useful in the near future.
The thing is, what I think also is going to happen in the future is, like, we're going to see a lot of people not being employed. We're going to see a lot more people freelancing and working for themselves, thanks to the internet.
True. And another point from which I think we can be optimistic is that currently Chinese population, the quality of Chinese population, Chinese workforce is still not on par with international standard. Skilled workers make up 8% of workforce in Jiangsu province, much higher than the national average, and yet far behind the level in developed countries at 40%. So we may be worrying about population, the works being taken over by machines, but we have to know that those jobs being taken over by machines are low quality, low demand, menial jobs. And as long as we train our kids in the cutting edge technology, I mean, make sure they go to college, make sure they get the education they need, also the professional training they need, maybe they'll just find a way to make a living.
Yeah, and also it seems, by just the face value of that, still, STEM subjects seem to be something useful to get yourself into. At least know how to work with a little bit of technology. Mm-hmm. And so the literary subjects don't sound that popular right now. We'll be back after this short break with more roundtable discussion.